Hi, I'm Steve Michelotti from the Azure Government Engineering team. With me today, I have Anna Roth from the Cognitive Services team. I'm super excited to have Anna with me today to talk about cognitive services on Azure Government, because as a developer, which I am, sometimes I take for granted that I can just call an API and get an answer back. But Anna is here to be able to shed some light on what's actually happening behind the scenes. So we'll rely on her expertise with that. So welcome, Anna.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start out. Can you just tell us a little bit about what your role is on the Cog Services team?
Absolutely. So I'm a program manager on the Microsoft Cognitive Services computer vision team.
Okay. All right, great. So we know that Microsoft has this massive artificial intelligence portfolio. Can you talk to us a little bit about where Cognitive Services fits into that?
Absolutely. So we sit sort of firmly in the services component, as might be obvious by the name. But in particular, we're a set of services that are oriented around the idea of making machine intelligence very, very accessible. So all of these services are based on kind of different areas of machine intelligence, but they're all very, very simple, either REST APIs hosted on Azure or, in a handful of cases, SDKs. Okay. But the idea is something that's sort of trivial to use.
Okay, great. So I heard you mention REST SDKs. So talk about a little bit about what cognitive services are.
Sure. So let's talk about kind of the general case, which is that these are cloud services. They're hosted in Azure. And most of them take, you know, a simple input, so either an image or a piece of text or audio, let you send it up to Azure and then get a structured result on the way back. So for example, maybe you send a picture and you get back, where are all the faces in this picture? Or you send a piece of text and you get a translation or the sentiment of that text. And so they're designed to be really easy to use. So kind of one of the core goals that we had is that, you know, it should be very, very straightforward, that these are problems where, you know, you don't have to build this yourself. You got to get something like face recognition or speech to text for free. That should be, you know, not something you have to worry about in building your own application.
Okay.
And then kind of by nature of being cloud services, they're also really flexible, right? So they're platform agnostic, they're language agnostic. You know, anything where you could make an HTTP call is sort of sufficient.
As a developer, I heard you mention things like Azure Cloud Services and HTTP endpoints. You're talking my language now. And we have many of these HTTP endpoints on Azure Gov right now. The initial ones we brought over were some of the vision APIs as well as translation. We have many more of these coming. Talk a little bit about what some of these APIs are.
Sure. Well, we're at 29 APIs now.
Okay.
We started at 4 2 years ago. So things have gotten kind of crazy. But generally, we're looking at APIs that are in the area of what people call machine intelligence. So kind of broad categories where we know that a lot of developers want to be able to use these kind of inputs. So we have things like vision, which you talked about, speech, so text-to-speech, speech-to-text, and even customized speech recognition. Language, so things like sentiment analysis, translation, knowledge processing, so tools that let you look over, for example, structured documents, search, so all the Bing APIs, and then labs, where we're putting some of the new stuff that we've been working on at Microsoft Research or at Bing or at our Cloud and Enterprise division to kind of let people test it out, try it out, and see, you know, is this useful?
Oh, cool. So it's not necessarily production ready, but as a developer, I can go and try it out. Is this something I might find useful in the future, that sort of thing?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. All right, so what we're going to do here is I have a little prototype that I built, and it has some government-focused scenarios. And we're going to just walk through a couple of screens. I'm going to have you help us understand some of the things that are happening behind the scenes. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to click over here to my known individuals screen, where we have a list of known individuals. And let's click Kaiser Sose here, because this might be someone that might be a known individual to a government agency. And I can see that I have pictures on him. I have maybe a voice audio sample. I have metadata stored in a database. So I'm pulling information from, you know, biographical information from different sources. But the thing I'm most interested in here is the faces, since we're talking about our vision APIs. So I know that as a developer, when I was creating the screen, I had to upload these faces individually for this person. When I do that, what's happening behind the scenes when I upload a face for this person?
Sure. So here it looks like you're using our face identification part of the face API. So what you're doing here is kind of building a person group, so kind of a set of different persons. And what we actually ask you to do is upload multiple photos of individuals who you're trying to recognize. So, you know, while you can still train with sort of one image, we ideally would want you to get 3, 5, even up to, I think, 248 images.
Of a single person.
Of a person.
Wow.
What you really want to do, though, is kind of get varied images. So you want potentially different angles, different lighting conditions, et cetera. so that we kind of get more information or more examples, so that when we train this person group, it's sort of, we can make a better match.
Okay. So is there an ideal number? I heard you mention 3 to 5. Or should I get 248? Or once I get to a certain number, is it really not needed?
I would say sort of 3 to 5 is generally a minimum, although it's not, you know, you can, one will work.
Is there an ideal?
I don't know that there's an ideal. I think it kind of depends on the conditions that you'll be kind of using Face API in. So,
okay.
You know, some conditions may be more challenging than others.
So I also heard you mention something called a person group in there. And for something like this, it might have been easy because I have a group of Kaiser Sose and his associates, but I might not know a group like that in advance. What is a person group, and is there any recommendation for how I organize that?
Sure. So the identification operation is reliant on the idea of a person group. So you're essentially uploading faces for individual persons.
Okay.
In other cases, maybe you might use something like similar face searching, where if you don't know kind of individual persons, but you say, here are all the faces I have, show me kind of similar faces, you can use that in that case.
Okay, so the person group could be sort of an arbitrary thing. I can organize that however I want, kind of partition it however I want.
Well, you do want each person to be a person.
Yes, so. But within each person, I can put 3 people in a person group or 10 people in a person group?
Yes, it's completely dependent on your...
I don't have to have the known associates that know each other in a person group. I can wherever.
Okay. A person group is basically, you know, when I send you a face, which are the people that I might want to recognize.
Okay.
So if I want to tell between Bob, Alice, Mary, and Susan, then they would be my person group.
But I could check across multiple person groups.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so another thing I noticed when I was developing this is that once I uploaded a bunch of pictures, I have this green button here to train the model. And to me, it was just a single HTTP endpoint. What actually happened when I called that endpoint?
So on the back end, we're sort of doing some indexing, basically, so that we can... you know, we are extracting certain features from images, and so we want to be able to actually sort of quickly search through and say, when you submit a new photo, be able to do that comparison in an efficient way.
Okay, so when you talk about indexing, are you talking about things like facial landmarks?
So people actually often ask this because our face detection API returns sort of 27 landmarks.
Okay.
But for recognition, we're actually using kind of more features than just the 27.
Okay, cool. All right, so now that we talked about setting that up, let's actually see it in action. So I'm going to flip over here to image analysis. And let me select I've already uploaded multiple images. So here I have an image of several known, or actually let's say we don't know who any of these people are. So we'll just take this image and we'll click the button for face analysis. And this is going to go, to me, it's just making an HTTP call. And I see, okay, we've got some red boxes and green boxes. So red boxes are we don't know who the person is. So if I click the red box, even though I don't know who it is, I can see that I've got some metadata here. It's a male. I have an age estimate, some emotion. I noticed the emotion API seems to be collapsed now into the Face API. Is that correct?
So we've added emotion as an attribute into Face API.
Okay.
It was a very common customer request.
Makes sense. Definitely makes sense. And so the green means I do know who it is. So let's say I click this person right here. Oh, subject identified is Kaiser Sose. Now, of course, I can view the detail because I have that biographical information in the database, and I can immediately flip over here. But when we look at this result, I notice that we have this confidence score here, and the confidence score says 0.68. What is that confidence score, and is that low? That looks like Kaiser Sose to me. Should that number have been higher? Help us interpret that number.
Sure. So we give you a confidence score back with your identification request, basically because so that you can kind of customize your own application to your own sort of needs. So in some cases, you know, people might want only really, really high confidence results. And in other cases, you know, you just want things that like sort of look like it might be the right person.
Okay.
So I would say, you know, no particular number is kind of like, this is great or this is terrible. It really is dependent on kind of your application, your tolerance for, you know, kind of a level of confidence and also potentially kind of the level, how challenging your problem is. You know, maybe if the problem is more challenging, you know, you're willing to take a lower confidence score.
Right. I think that definitely makes sense. Microsoft is not trying to say, we will tell you yes or no. No. You, as the customer, will make the decision based on the confidence score, what your threshold is. It's okay for it to be a subjective thing is what I'm hearing here.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Is there anything we can do to increase the confidence score? Like, if I have sometimes run into examples where I knew it was that person, but it gave me the red box instead of a green box. I don't know if it was my image quality or maybe the picture was blurry. Are there things I can do to increase the chances or increase that confidence score?
So I think you can can kind of think about this problem in two ways. So there's one set of things you can do around kind of your training data. And so I think we talked earlier a little bit that you want kind of varied pictures.
Okay.
So you really do want, you know, multiple angles, you know, different kind of conditions, maybe even different hair styles, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just sort of variation, glasses, whatever. That's kind of, I think, the number one thing you can do to kind of improve your results.
Like good samples.
More examples, yep. Better results. The sort of second set of things is kind of, you don't always have the sort of capacity to change, but in some cases you might, which is, you know, actually the photo that you submit for recognition, right? You're going to get better results if it's like relatively well lit, if the person's face is relatively frontal, you know, not to anthropomorphize too much, but
right.
Things that make it easier for you to recognize somebody, you can think of as sort of like a rough heuristic that it generally will get better performance.
That makes sense. Is there a minimum like pixel size of how big that face should be in the picture to be recognized?
So I think we accept a minimum of 30, we recognize up to 36 by 36 is the minimum.
So that face rectangle should be 36 by 36,
correct.
Ideally minimum,
yeah.
In order to be recognized. Okay. And I notice in this picture, we have five or six people. How many faces can the API recognize in a single image?
So we take up to 64.
64,
faces,
wow, okay. Yeah. All right, great. So we can get a lot of faces in one picture. Another thing we kind of showed just for demo purposes here is I'm going to click this button for view raw face results. You know, one of the things I heard you say earlier was you send a payload in, it might be an image, and you get a payload back. It might be a structured data, a JSON format. Sometimes I think people see this and they think, oh, Cognitive Services returned an image with boxes around the faces, whereas actually no, we have these things like the face rectangle, which we see right here. And so that enabled me as a developer to just write like two lines of JavaScript to draw the rectangles around the faces, just kind of loop over it. And I can see other things here like the face landmarked, which is null, but if I had a switch, that would have enabled me to have, what is it, 27 you said?
27,
landmarks
yes.
To come back? And those are things like the eyes and the nose and mouth corners.
More
and
or less, yeah.
Like that. That's my developer interpretation of it. And of course, a lot of these things we're seeing here, like age and gender, were things displaying on the screen. But this, I think, is a good example of the types of payloads people.
Yep, outputs are always going to be sort of structured JSON.
And a lot of the Cog Services APIs are similar to Face in terms of similarly structured payload.
I think we have made an effort to make outputs, you know, relatively consistent across the APIs.
Somewhat consistent developer
with 29 is never perfect. But yeah, so I think our goal is always to have sort of very straightforward REST APIs where the output is something kind of straightforward, yeah. Easy to interpret.
Well, I appreciate that as a developer. So, okay, so let's move on from some of the face detection and let's go back to our image analysis. And I'm going to select a different. This is, imagine, an image from a security camera in a subway station. So humans, we can look at this and see that, okay, this is, looks like a platform, and I see train tracks here. So this time, I'm going to click the object analysis button instead of face analysis, and we'll make a call here to get some real-time results. And so this is actually calling, so I wrote this to call the computer vision API, and I can see some results here like, okay, subway train at a train station. I can see train 99%. That's a pretty good number. Platform station. I'm also seeing some things down here. We have this OCR category, and I see shepherd. I see west. Hold on, what's that? Let's go like take a look at the picture. And oh, okay. So there's my OCR, and I see shepherd and west, and these kind of things here. So we've seen a few things here in terms of identifying what the image is, and we've seen OCR results. What is happening behind the scenes to make, that seems like some black magic. It's just a black box. I can call an endpoint, get a result back. Help me understand what's happening here.
Sure, so.
And I'm okay with black magic, by the way.
Not black magic. You're seeing here actually quite a number of very nice different examples of how Microsoft has used deep learning. Actually, I think for all the features that you called out, the research papers are available up in the Cognitive Services Computer Vision API documentation. But yeah, so these are all kind of nice and different examples of deep learning. I want to call in particular, actually, two nice things. We have the image caption there that you saw up there. You scope
so that
the top
was
there.
The, where it said the orange text there, subway train on a train station.
Exactly, which is actually a delightful example of how we've taken, you know, research in computer vision and research in natural language processing and kind of combined those two fields to get these kind of wonderful image captions. We actually just improved that model with, I think, double-digit performance improvements back at build. So we're very, very happy about the kind of new and updated model. One of Manager Cloud Services is we can consistently improve sort of the experience, kind of whatever the newest research we have. Then you kind of have tagging, so you know, kind of generating what is in this image, and then OCR. And I will flag actually on OCR that that has been designed mostly for document reading, so it's kind of better optimized for reading in kind of like text documents as opposed to that, which is kind of more OCR in the wild. I mean, it does perform very nicely there, but in general, it's kind of better optimized for document reading.
Okay, that's interesting to know. Great. So as far as the objects that computer vision is recognizing, how much breadth and depth of objects do we have out of the box?
So we're pretty regularly increasing the number of tags. I think when we launched, we had 84 or 86. Now we're at about 2K with the expectation of that it's going to go up in the next year.
Okay. So what if I have an object like a car, and I have a picture of a car, it says, that's a car. I'm like, yes, it's correct. But what if I want to know some nuanced differences, like it's a Honda Civic versus a Toyota Corolla or something like that? Can I do that?
So one of the things we actually released into public preview at Build was this lovely service called Custom Vision Service. You can find it at customvision.ai.
Right.
But it's a tool for building custom image classifiers. So we actually had a lot of customers come to us and say, you know, computer vision API is great. I can recognize a lot of things that I care about, but there's a few things that it doesn't recognize that I care about for my business. And so this lets you actually train your own image classifier using a very, very straightforward either REST interface, like very straightforward APIs, or you can use kind of a graphical user interface that we've built on top of those.
You actually have like an admin portal. I can just go in and do it without writing code.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a lovely website.
Okay.
But you know, so you can kind of choose there. But the goal there actually is to make it sort of extremely straightforward to build your own image classifier, to do so very quickly, so in on the order of sort of 10 minutes, and with very little data. So with kind of on the order of 50-ish images per tag that you're trying to recognize for your first prototype.
Oh, so 50 is a good number. So we're not talking about 3 to 5 images here.
We do want
like 50.
But that's kind of much better than traditional techniques, which might require several thousand.
Okay. Now, what about, so I use the example of a car where we know it's a car, but we need to get the differentiation of what type of car. What if it's an object, well, we don't even know the object? Is that something Custom Vision can do too, or is that different, the scenario?
So with Custom Vision, you're really taking kind of discrete classes that you've pre-identified, and you're kind of training it to recognize those classes. So you're building a classifier that can maybe recognize apples, bananas, carrots, and your favorite hat, whatever.
Okay.
You know, there's not really a service today for here's an arbitrary item I've never recognized. You know, if I was in that situation, I might actually try the Bing similar image search API.
Okay. And where does the cognitive toolkit fit into all this?
Sure. So the Cognitive Toolkit is a deep learning framework. So a lot of actually what you've seen in cognitive services was built with Cognitive Toolkit. And there's certain classes of problems where potentially either because there isn't a cognitive service or because you need to have something really customized, you might want to use the Cognitive Toolkit instead.
All right. So we also have this thing called Media Analytics. What are the types of things that does?
Sure. So Media Analytics is a whole platform for doing all kinds of processing and display of videos. So you can do things like chain together all sorts of processing, like maybe chain together kind of face tracking and transcription and a number of different types of processing to your own videos.
So with Media Analytics, you said face tracking, will it tell me like the timestamp where a face appeared in the video?
Yeah. And actually even better than that, you can kind of track a particular face through a video. Which is sort of advantageous versus looking at stills. A lot of cases, you know, a lot of the things you'll actually want to do with videos, maybe you can actually just kind of split a video into stills and run it on cognitive services. But this is a nice example of something where, you know, to do face tracking, you really actually need to track through through a video.
So it's just doing face detection, but if I wanted to do face recognition, then I would have to do like a frame grab and send that to the face API?
Yes, I don't believe they've added face recognition to it yet.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. Well, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Any other takeaways we should be, especially as it pertains to the vision APIs, that we should be thinking about as we're using these services?
So my biggest takeaway for everybody watching is that these are very easy to get started. So you can kind of try them all out for free. It's kind of a trial system. They're designed to be very, very straightforward to use. If you don't find them that way, tell us, because it means we're not doing a good job. But we've, you know, we really have gone here for ease of use and for getting you to kind of valuable results as soon as possible. So check out, you know, there's extensive sample code and documentation. But I would really just encourage everybody to give it a shot because it's much easier than you think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I can attest that even these screens we're looking at were built in a couple days because the APIs were so easy to use. So thank you for that. And thank you for this session. It's been extremely enlightening. So this is Steve McLaddy with Anna Roth talking about cognitive services on Azure Government. Thanks for watching.